South Dakota Public Broadcasting, sdpb.org.
Of calling this meeting of Senate State Affairs to order this morning. We've got a couple bills up this morning. For those of you who are interested in testifying on the bills, be kind enough, if you would, to use the sign-up sheet that you see Representative Kirkaby using so that we can spell your name correctly in our minutes. Ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Senator Abdalla, Hansen, Heidekrim, Knudsen, Olson, Roden, Turbeferry, Gray, Dempster.
We have quorum. Motion for the minutes.
So moved.
We have a motion. Second. Discussion. All those in favor? Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. That then brings us to House Bill 1181. House Bill 1181, establish a veterinarian education loan repayment program for veterinarians who fulfill certain requirements.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, I'm Tom Bruner, District 29.
Representative, you are welcome here.
Thank you. Today I bring you House Bill 1181. It's an act to establish a veterinary education loan repayment program for veterinarians who fulfill certain requirements. basically, this bill, we stripped the money out of it because obviously there is not a lot of money to go around, but the idea, I think, is very sound. A large animal vet comes out of school with $120,000 in costs against that education, and South Dakota is facing a critical shortage of large animal vets. What we're talking about in large animal is food-producing vets, not your puppies and kitties necessarily, but horses and cattle, that where most of us make our living. Last year, 2,600 vets graduated, and only 15% chose to practice large animal vets. And the problem, of course, is because when you come out of vet school and you have the opportunity to work 8 to 5 on animals that aren't going to kick you and stomp you in the mud, it's pretty attractive. So this would encourage kids to come back to the country and work with large animals. And the parameters of the program is set out in the bill. They're for communities that actually need them, less than 15,000, and only 3 at a time. It's laid out, and the State Board of Veterinary Medical Examiners would actually set the parameters and have rulemaking authority. 15,000 or less, and the community has to need them, and some other eligibility concerns. So with that, I would let others speak to the bill and ask you for favorable consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Other proponents of House Bill 1181? Other proponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jennifer Staley, and I'm a registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Veterinary Medical Association.
Welcome, Jennifer.
Thank you. We are here in support of 1181, and I think that what's being passed out to you will probably highlight why we're here in support of it. The pages are passing out to you three maps that really highlight the lack of or the critical need for large food animal veterinarians. And I know that you all have seen maps before. I won't go through them extensively, but I think perhaps the most compelling thing that you'll glean from that is that we have 16 counties in South Dakota that have more than 25,000 large animals in them, and no large animal veterinarian in that county. So you're talking about a huge geographical issue for getting those veterinary medical services there. I would simply add to the statistics that Representative Bruner presented to you that 13 states have some sort of educational loan repayment program, as is being proposed in House Bill 1181. And as he said, only 15% of those 2,600 veterinarians who are graduating each year are going into large animal veterinary medicine in the first place. And so there's clearly a small pool to choose from, and we've got other states that are already putting in place incentives to try to recruit them to their state. I would also let you know, just for clarification for anyone who might be wondering, this is different than the tuition reimbursement program that is run through the Board of Regents. This is a different proposal than that. There is a program in place right now that works very well. We have up to 24 students from the state of South Dakota where the Board of Regents will pay the differential between in-state and out-of-state tuition for veterinary college at Iowa State University because we don't have a vet program. We certainly see that as a need, but what this bill does is very similar to what you have done in the past with doctors and dentists and other paraprofessionals in rural communities. It provides an incentive program to have folks come and serve the profession in those counties that need it the most. Again, I hope you will agree that there's a critical need that's coming upon us in the veterinary medical profession, just as there is in our other healthcare medical professions, and that House Bill 1181, as presented, is a way to address that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Jennifer. Other proponents of House Bill 1181? Other proponents? Opponents of 1181? Opponents of 1181?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee members. Josh Larson, Bureau of Finance and Management.
Welcome, Josh.
I come before you in opposition of House Bill 1181. There's three issues that I would like to bring to this committee. The first issue I'd like to address is the source of funding. As Representative Bruner stated, the general funds were removed from this appropriation over on the House side. This bill would basically generate the revenue to fund this program through contributions, grants, transfers, settlement funds, interest received, and so forth. I just don't believe that any of these resources are guaranteed sources of funding to support a new program, which this bill addresses. We're just kind of in a state where we're having a hard time paying our and funding our current programs. I just think it would be hard to support a new program. Secondly, I'd like to address an issue of personnel. The Board of Veterinary and Medical Examiners would have oversight over this program, and that board is currently a four-member board, and that board is charged with licensing the veterinarians within the state of South Dakota. This board currently meets 4 to 6 times a year. And that board does not have any FTE. They actually contract out to the Animal Industry Board to cover their day-to-day business procedures. I just don't think that four-member board would be able to address the needs of recruiting and determining eligibility, doing applications, award amounts, award procedures, community eligibility, community assessments, and conditions for use of the loan repayment funds. I believe they would be a good avenue to have oversight over the program, but I don't believe that they have the manpower to administer it. The Animal Industry Board, I don't know if they would get burdened with a lot of the administrative. They don't have the staffing either. The third issue I would like to address is if the goal of this program is to solicit private donations in order to create a loan repayment program in the state, do we really need state legislation? Could this be set up through some sort of foundation or something and run it that way? With that, Mr. Chairman, I would urge you to vote no on House Bill 1181. I'd stand by for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Other opponents of House Bill 1181? Other opponents? Opportunity for rebuttal.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, again, Jennifer Scally. I would simply share with you that I think, in all fairness, BFNM has raised a legitimate issue with regard to personnel. The stripping of the money in the House committee certainly didn't do the bill any favors, and the economic times have not allowed us to find a funding source for it. We do, however, just with regard to the comment about the private foundations, we do believe that it's a critical shortage. Ag is our number one economy, that the state is going to have a role to play in addressing this issue at some point if there is money available. And we would prefer to continue to have these discussions at the state level so that, again, we can have a program that is parallel or comparable to what we're doing for the medical profession in our rural communities. But we do certainly have to acknowledge the realistic budget times that we're in and the comments that are made by BFNM.
Thank you. Questions for proponents, opponents? Questions? Jennifer, I have a quick question for you. typically when there's a shortage of anything, the market sends out a signal and price rises. Price rises, all of a sudden people become more interested in being veterinarians. Why does the market fail in this circumstance?
Well, I think part of it has to do with in our rural communities and the ag market only has so much fluctuation in it. You can only add so much to the price of the ag product and still come out on the back end for our producers. And so I think we're going to get there. I think the market's probably going to ring this bell a lot louder as we move on, Senator. What we're trying to do is get out ahead of that curve, because I think, again, as I've referenced the other medical professions, I think the veterinary medical profession is going to hit that baby boom bubble here pretty soon, where we don't have a lot of new veterinarians who are going into those rural areas. So we're actually trying to ring the bell before the market rings the bell, because we understand the course we're on.
Other questions for proponents, opponents? Close for committee discussion and action.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Gray.
While I think this is probably a pretty good idea, obviously we have a shortage in some of our counties, especially in some of those counties where there are a large number of food animals. I don't think without an appropriation, I'm not sure we're really accomplishing much. And so I would move this to the 41st day.
We have a motion to the 41st day. Do we have a second? We have a motion to the 41st day. Do we have a second? We have a motion. We have a second. Motion to Senator Gray. Second to Senator Olson. Motion and second. Motion is to the 41st day. Senator Rode.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, as the Senate Prime Sponsor, I would just like to comment briefly that this is an issue that does need to be addressed, and I think that this bill was brought forward in a good faith attempt, if nothing more, to raise the awareness of the shortage that we're faced in the country and the problems that are imminent. Because in my area of the state, in rural Meade County, in Meade County, we've been fortunate, but you get in the more remote areas, as Senator Bruner said, it becomes too attractive for veterinarians to stay in a nice warm office and take care of little Fluffy, who is priceless, rather than drive 50 miles to a slop-filled corral and work on old Bessie, who is worth about 50 cents a pound, if you're lucky. And so there's not much incentive for these veterinarians to do that kind of work, and it's a vital need in our areas. Again, I think with the circumstances, with the appropriation being taken off, that this bill has run its course, and that it should be put to bed today, even though it is a very worthy cause, and we need to continue this conversation. Thank you.
We have a motion. We have a second. The motion is to the 41st day. Is there additional discussion? Yes, Secretary to Senator Avella.
I believe, Mr. Chairman, I believe what I did was just shot my own dog.
Ask the Secretary. The motion is to the 41st day. Ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Senator Avella.
Aye.
Hansen. Heideprim.
Aye.
Knudsen.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Roden.
No.
Turbach Berry. Gray.
Aye.
Dempster.
Aye. House Bill 1181 goes to the 41st day. That then brings us to House Bill 1197. Allow single-family dwellings that are under construction or listed for sale by contractors to be classified as owner-occupied single-family dwellings for the purpose of taxation. Do we have proponents? Do we have proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Mark Kirkby, District 35, representative from Rapid City of Pennington County.
Welcome, Representative Kirkby.
Thank you. House Bill 1197 is an act that offers two changes to our current property tax law. Number one, it supports our home building construction business. Number two, it indeed fixes a flaw in our current property tax system for new home buyers. House Bill 1197 specifically asks you to invest in what works, and that certainly is in our construction business. By classifying new construction homes with an owner-occupied status, our economy will reap many rewards. This bill is our own little version of an economic stimulus package. This is not a Spearfish or Mitchell or Rapid City or a Myrtle bill. It affects our entire economy in the great state of South Dakota, because home builders are everywhere. specifically during these untrying times, we need to keep our builders on their mini shopping sprees, and heaven forbid we allow them to continue on their practice on building homes in our communities. By keeping our subcontractors and our plumbers and our electricians and our painters and everybody else employed, that certainly is that hidden agenda behind this bill. I'm not going to sugarcoat that at all. It's a huge opportunity that we have in front of us. Current law taxes new construction homes as commercial property until they are sold to a new home buyer. I am asking for you to expedite this property tax classification by allowing a newly constructed home to be taxed and classified as owner-occupied. That new home buyer will immediately realize that owner-occupied status that the majority of the citizens of South Dakota realize from their own home. Can't emphasize enough that immediate availability to have owner-occupied status is something that we really need to focus on as well. The current flaw in our system that certainly is acknowledged by our own Department of Revenue. The building contractor will still be paying a full owner-occupied tax load to support government services, just like we do. That necessary portion going to local school districts, to the fire department, law enforcement, road maintenance, it's all on that tax bill. It's also a time that we really need this little support during our trying times in our economy. Specifically, I just want to do a couple little factual reality that we're experiencing in my district in Rapid City. In 2007, we had 259 building permits for new construction homes, total of $41 million in new construction value. Last year in 2008, we only had 199 of those new construction building permits for a total value of $29 million. That's a 25% reduction that we have received in Rapid City alone. This economic stimulus for our construction force, it will keep our workforce employed and continue the efforts of affordable housing. And with the current average time frame of up to 6 months and well beyond exceeding and having a builder sell their property, we must capitalize on this opportunity to enhance our economy and our workforce right now. And I would just ask for your favorable consideration in supporting House Bill 1197. Mr. Chairman, it's an honor to appear in front of you, and I'd stand by for any questions you might have.
Thank you, Representative. Other proponents of House Bill 1197? Other proponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Jason Gant, State Senator, Sioux Falls, District 11. I, too, write in support of House Bill 1197, and a couple of points I just wanted to emphasize. One of them is the price of the home. If the contractor is able to pay a lesser amount in taxes, he should be able to pass that on to the consumer who's buying the house. And by lowering and changing this tax system, we'll also still encourage these homes to be built in these trying times, which will then continue to increase our contractor's excise tax by having more and more homes built to, especially in Sioux Falls, to have the economy continue to grow and the housing market continue. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would encourage your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Jason, other proponents, House Bill 1197.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee members, Senator Jim Peterson, District 4, Grant, Dole, Brookings, and Northern Third of Moody County.
So
I just wanted to stop and talk to you for a couple of minutes about a situation that occurred, I think it was around 3 or 4 years ago. I was contacted by a little lumber yard in Clear Lake, South Dakota. And that gentleman had been building spec homes, and he had been building them on blocks in his yard. And when you build a spec home on blocks in your yard, you're not subject to any property taxes. Well, then he decided that he'd help his little community of Clear Lake, and he bought two lots, and he built two spec homes on those lots. One of them he sold right away, so that was fine. The other one he didn't. And then when he got his tax notice, he noticed that he was taxed at the commercial rate. And he contacted me at that time, and I did write up a bill. And it's very similar to this bill. And at that time, it didn't go anywhere, and I hope today it does go somewhere. Because he said to me, if I'm going to continue to put all of my money into building a spec home and putting it on a lot in this city, why should I be taxed at a much higher rate than an owner occupied? He said, I'm at risk. I'm subject to the market fluctuations. And it just made sense, you know, where we have a good housing shortage in the state of South Dakota, let's not penalize these people that are willing to put their dollars into building a new home on a lot here in South Dakota. So I hope that you will pass this bill and send it on the floor. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Other proponents of House Bill 1197?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Dwight Newharth. I represent the South Dakota Home Builders Association and a registered lobbyist.
Welcome.
The need for the bill has arisen because the economy is changing, and right now you're penalizing not only consumers but also communities that want to make housing available for potential employers that might move into your community. So it makes sense to have this economic development tool. Other states recognize that these are not commercial, businesses like you would be taxed at a commercial rate. They're inventory basically for consumers to move into. And so if you discourage the building to begin with, what happens? There are fewer homes built, and then there is less tax revenue, not only to the state of South Dakota, but to local governments too. So we have a number of other people, a couple of our officers that would like to testify, so I'll stand by for any other questions.
Other proponents, House Bill 1197.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Kurt Wayman. I'm the president of South Dakota Home Builders, and I'm from Rapid City.
Welcome, Kurt.
Good morning. I'm here to talk in support of House Bill 1197. Reason being is not only is it a tax fairness issue, it's an economic stimulus issue. We, as things are currently, it affects us when we build a spec house. It adds costs onto it if we don't have that house sold before the 1st of November. And consequently, that is reflected in our prices. As the way the economic conditions are right now, we will, as builders, we have to plan out what we're going to be doing for the year, and there's a good chance that as it stands now, because of the economy, you'll see less spec houses being built towards the end of the year, which does affect money income to the state. It also at some point is going to put a pressure on housing. It's going to create a shortage, and it could potentially drive prices up. So as we see it, if this bill could be passed, it would encourage us as builders to go ahead and keep doing what we do. We wouldn't have to be concerned about that November 1st deadline, and it also would be much fairer to that young couple or whatever age couple we have that purchases that house. It puts them in the owner-occupied rate right away. So I ask for your support in passing this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Other proponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Mel Zellmer. I'm a builder in the Greater Sioux Empire.
Welcome, Mel.
Thank you. More specifically, T, South Dakota. And the market I mainly deal in is the under 200,000, right at 200 or under. And like the gentleman from Mr. Kirkaby mentioned, out west the building permits have dropped. And I have a report that we published in our December home builder newsletter. and building permits are down in Sioux Falls, T, Harrisburg, surrounding communities, Brandon, by about 40% from 2007 to 2008. A lot of this decline in building permits is in that lower end market. And the reason for that is the qualification process. Good credit rating has gone from a 680 score to a 740 score, which cuts a lot of people out because they can't qualify because the ratios get skewed. One of the ways those ratios get skewed is when they have to go in and qualify, they qualify at that higher tax rate, that commercial tax rate, which on a $150,000 house adds about $700 to the qualification process. If we can get them qualified as owner occupied immediately, that would lower their payment by about 40, 50 bucks a month, which I think will help qualify. For that reason, I ask you to please support this bill. Thank you.
Other proponents?
Mr. Chair, committee members, I'm Manny Steele, District 12, which is Lincoln and Minnehaha County.
Welcome, Manny.
Thank you. I'm just here as a me too. I believe it's a win-win-win situation. I believe it's going to help the home builders. I believe it's going to help the home buyers. And I believe it'll help to stimulate our economy, and that's the bottom line. Thank you.
Proponents. Other proponents? Do we have other proponents? Opponents of House Bill 1197.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Michael Kenny, South Dakota Department of Revenue and Regulation.
Welcome, Mike.
Thank you. I'm feeling a little outnumbered this morning.
An unusual circumstance, I might add.
That's true as well. What we're talking about this morning is the owner-occupied classification. That impacts one levy in South Dakota, the school general fund tax levy. That levy is about $4.68 lower for owner-occupied valuation than it is for commercial classification. So if you've got a $100,000 house, the difference in taxes works out to $468. That's what we're talking about here. That's the savings that the spec home builders are asking for today. I've got three issues with this bill, and the first one is that this is not tax relief. This is a tax shift. There's no free money in our property tax system. For a $100,000 home, I told you that the spec home builder would pay $468 less. Somebody else has to make that up. Someone else has to pay those taxes. So if you expand the owner-occupied status to spec home builders, you're shifting the tax burden from those contractors owning the homes to our actual homeowners, our farmers and ranchers, and our Main Street businesses. Also, the proponents of this legislation don't have any idea how much it will cost, how many homes we're talking about, how much valuation we're talking about. What they're essentially asking you to do is write a blank check that's going to have to be paid for by the other property tax owners in this state. The second issue that I'd like to talk to you about is there is already an effective incentive for spec home builders. And if I could get some assistance passing this out. As the members who have worked with me in the tax committees know, I am addicted to handouts. I always have to have a handout. I don't know why. But the handout that I'm passing out for you today shows our current discretionary formulas. And that is an incentive that's available to spec home builders in the counties. It's a very effective program. The discretionary formula works by taxing only a percentage of the new construction or the new valuation within a county for up to the first 5 years. The typical discount that's given is that only 20% of the value is taxed the first year, 40% is taxed the second year, 60% the third year, and then 80% the fourth year. In the fifth year, it comes fully onto the tax rolls. any of the counties that have a, this is kind of our internal form. We don't normally hand this out, so it's not as the it's not the prettiest form that we have. But any of the counties that are listed with development lots, those would certainly qualify, or the redevelopment neighborhood, those would qualify for as well for the discretionary formula. So there's already a very effective incentive that's actually controlled by the people who collect and spend property taxes, the counties and the cities. So this incentive would be redundant. And I would also add that would be in addition to the incentives that's already available. So they would get the owner-occupied status, and they also could qualify for the development neighborhood discretionary formula. And finally, my third point is that this bill goes in the contrary, the opposite direction of where the legislature has gone over the last few years. Over the last few years, we've been working to tighten the requirements for who gets the owner-occupied classification. And this bill, of course, loosens them. A few years ago, we limited the classification to the owner's primary residence. If we pass this expansion of the owner-occupied class if we pass this expansion, the next people that are going to be coming in and asking you to expand the class again are the owners of rental property. If we say yes to the spec builders, how are you going to say no to the rental property owners? And as we expand this classification, we dilute its benefits to the people who are receiving the tax break now. So for those reasons, we don't need a redundant incentive that will cause taxes to shift from the spec home builders to everyone else. We'd ask for you to please oppose HB 1197. Thank you.
Other opponents of House Bill 1197? Other opponents? Opportunity for rebuttal.
Mr. Chairman, if I could. Specifically regarding the discretionary formula, that applies to real estate, to raw land, when that developer is going in to carve out a couple little lots for platting purposes. In the home building stage, it certainly is not applicable. It does nothing to allow any incentive for a builder to complete a product and or reduce or incentivize his inventory. Secondly, regarding the school tax formula, that percentage that the school district is going to receive, regardless, an emphasis on regardless, but if I could take another step, what if in fact there are no homes to be applying a school tax to? And that's really where we're sitting at right now. In a nutshell, this is, I can't emphasize enough, the importance on allowing our construction industry to maintain not only their trade but to continue their efforts in affordable housing. That, Mr. Chairman, I again thank you for your time.
Questions for proponents or opponents? Senator Abdullah.
I have a question for Mr. Kenyon. Just for purposes of clarifying things, Mr. Kenyon, let's use T for an example. A developer builds a little strip mall down there and it sits vacant for a period of time. What is that taxed at?
Mr. Chairman, if the development was subject to the discretionary formula, when it's finished, say it has a full value of $100,000, it would be taxed 20% the first year. Actually, in T,
would it be categorized as commercial?
It would be categorized as commercial.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman. And so then if a developer buys some property down there with the intent of building single-family houses, until they develop it, what is that land taxed at?
Mr. Chairman, again, the land would be taxed as commercial land until it's owned by the person who occupies it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Knudsen.
Michael, I'm just trying to get the sequence when a house is partially complete, the assessment date is January 1 or February 1?
Mr. Chairman, it's November 1.
November 1. If a house is partially complete on November 1, how do you assess that? I mean,
Mr. Chairman, they'll discount the valuation. So they'll say if the house is 50% complete, they'll discount it probably around 50%, maybe a little bit more.
In the typical case, when houses were selling rapidly, I would typically start a house in the spring. Again, on the prior November, it had been assessed at bare land, and then it's sold prior to November 1 in fast-moving times. Today, if on November 1 that house is completed and on my books as the contractor, then it becomes assessed at its full value as commercial property.
Mr. Chairman, that's true unless the discretionary formula applies.
Senator Beckberry.
I just want to have you stay with the discretionary formula a bit. I have a couple of questions. First, would you explain, you've used the phrase a couple times, subject to the discretionary formula. Come again with what that is. And then secondly, is it applied, as I think somebody indicated, is it applied to the value, the unimproved value of the real estate, or is it applied to the value as improved once the construction is done?
Mr. Chairman, the discretionary formula is an incentive that is controlled by the local governments, the county or the cities. If the county doesn't have a discretionary formula, the city can adopt one. You can see that if you look at Minnehaha County. There isn't a county-wide one, but Brandon and Colton and Del Rapids have all adopted their own. And there is, if you look at the last page of the handout, we list the statutes where the specific classes of property can be subject to the discretionary formula. There's two of them that I think would apply to new lots that a spec home builder may be working on. One is for a redevelopment neighborhood, and the other is for developer lots. If that property were subject to the discretionary formula, I believe that the whole value of the project would be, including the house, would be subject to the discretionary formula. It wouldn't just be the bare lot. That's what the discretionary formula does. It takes the value of the improvement and brings the value in over time.
Sir?
Sorry to be dense, but I still don't get how you get, I understand the county adopts it or doesn't adopt the formula, but how does a piece of property, how does a lot become subject to it? For example, if it's just the last bare lot in a neighborhood, is it still subject to it if that county has the discretionary formula, or do they have to be sort of underdeveloped areas that are identified, or how does it work?
Mr. Chairman, it can work both ways. For the redevelopment neighborhood, it would have to be an underdeveloped neighborhood that where the county would draw a boundary, and then say any new construction within that area would get the discretionary formula. And then for the developer lots, I think they could just say any new development lots in the as soon as it's plotted out, I think the process begins.
Senator Roden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Michael, I know some of the proponents have stated that they believe that this would promote more growth and more spec homes being built. I'm not at all comfortable that would happen on a large scale. But aside from that point, do you have any idea what the total dollars, the shift that would occur? I mean, if there assuming there was no additional growth because of this bill, if all things being equal. What would be the cost and shift?
Mr. Chairman, we looked and actually talked to Representative Kirkaby to try to work together to come out with the cost for this bill, and we couldn't do it. And we don't have an estimate as to how many properties and what their valuation would be, and that's what we would need to determine the tax shift because of this bill. I mean, we haven't been able to come up with a number that we feel comfortable presenting to you. So. I would suggest that by the number of proponents who are testifying for it, it would be a large number, but I don't have any way to justify that.
One more question, Mr. Chairman. The other question is, you know, I've always looked at the property tax, and especially the general fund, as from a fairness perspective of the cost of services associated with that property. And that's entered into the discussion on ag land quite often. But in regard to this conversation, a spec home, just from a fairness standpoint, a spec home that's sitting on in somebody's lot or hasn't been sold, there's nobody living in it, would it not be fair to say that there's no cost of service associated with that property until somebody's living in that property?
Mr. Chairman, I guess I wouldn't say that. I would say that like many other commercial property, there isn't a direct connection between the amount of taxes that they pay and the benefit that they get, at least directly from education. But that's the tax rate that applies to everyone now, the commercial rate, whether they have kids in school or not, so to speak.
Chairman. Mr. Kenyon, let's talk a little bit about owner-occupied. If I remember correctly, owner-occupied came about 2005 when Senator Knudsen and Governor Jenkel then reworked some of the property tax, and we came out with a...
95.
What did I say, 2005? Yeah, 1995, yes. Excuse me. And I think you have to certify for owner-occupancy, if I remember correctly. And I guess my question is, if you have a piece of rental property, how is that classified?
Mr. Chairman, if you have a piece of rental property, you'll be classified as the commercial property, and you'll pay the commercial property taxes. If you were to buy that piece of property and use it as your owner-occupied home, you would get the status eventually.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman. Mm-hmm. Is there anything considered non-owner-occupied if I own a second house, for instance?
Mr. Chairman, that change was made in 2000, I think that was 2005, where the requirement is that the property has to be your primary residence. So, for example, if you had a lake house, for example, that property would formally got the owner-occupied status, but does not anymore.
And so how would that property be taxed?
Mr. Chairman, if it's not taxed at the owner-occupied rate, it would be taxed at the commercial rate.
Mm-hmm. One other question for you, Mr. Kenyon. I believe you said that the taxes that would be shifted away from the new construction would go to farmers, ranchers, other homeowners, and business property owners. But if I'm not mistaken about some other legislation that I think is, maybe we can, let's assume that the legislation with regard to the school funding hold harmless passes, and I don't know where that is. Is it not true then that in fact none of the shift would go to farmers and ranchers, but rather the shift would be to other homeowners and to commercial, or am I misunderstanding that?
Mr. Chairman, that's right. If the if that legislation passes, it's SB 149 passes, each of those classes will be treated differently. Each classification will earn its own color Gabriel decrease. And if that is the case, you're right. Only the owner-occupied and commercial property owners would be impacted, not the ag property owners, if the bill passes.
Senator Knudsen.
Michael, but that would be true only as to the school taxes, because still city and county taxes, as you pointed out, would in fact be shifted. Because, again, in the simplest example, city tax is $100 under the current law, assuming inflation was 3%, they'd be entitled to collect $103 the next year, and they would collect that whether this property was valued as owner-occupied or as commercial in terms of city taxes and county taxes would be the same.
Mr. President, that's right. We're only this bill only impacts the school general fund taxes.
Senator Bella. Were questions for proponents and or opponents? No, sir. Mr. Kenyon, I've got a question for you. Forgive me, I guess it's a question of clarity. If I'm a developer, all of the land and the houses that I am developing is now considered to be commercial. If that's true, then I qualify for the discretionary formula. Is that discretionary formula routinely granted to me?
Mr. Chairman, if the county or city has adopted the discretionary formula that would apply to the property, you don't have to apply for it. You don't have to come in and sign a form. The Director of Equalization automatically applies that to your valuation. So there's it is routine.
So then if I'm a developer in Sioux Falls and I have obviously I qualify for that discretionary formula.
Mr. Chairman, I'd have to look, but if you're subject to, if you have a property that would be subject to the discretionary formula, it would automatically be applied to your property.
But if I'm a commercial developer, I automatically qualify. So that discretionary formula would be applied to my development. At such a time that I sell a home, that home then becomes a residential and is taxed as if it is a residential home, correct?
Mr. Chairman, if I followed your question, I think that's correct.
Doesn't the discretionary formula give me a far greater tax incentive than would just merely getting owner-occupied status for my, rather than commercial?
Mr. Chairman, it does. If the county has determined that you get the discretionary formula, the first year you're only paying taxes on 20% of the full value.
So then this would be an incentive in addition. Actually, it wouldn't, because I only when I sell the home does it become a residence.
Mr. Chairman, I think your initial statement was right. This incentive would be in addition to the discretionary formula if it applied, because you would pay taxes on only 20% of the value, and then you would also receive the owner-occupied classification for your property, and you'd pay less taxes because of that.
So it would be a discount on the 20% as well?
I think that's right, Mr. Chairman. You could certainly use both of them together.
Mr. Chairman.
Just along that same line, I'm sorry for belaboring this, but the 20%, the discretionary formula, that applies, that would be 20% of the total tax bill, all the mill levies included.
Mr. Chairman, that's right. It's 20, you pay taxes on 20% of the valuation.
Well, this is a period, this is questioning for both proponents and opponents. We heard in proponent testimony that you were interested in reducing the tax burden from commercial to owner-occupied. Well, I didn't hear any discussion of the discretionary formula. Could a proponent help me?
Gentlemen, I've been in building and developing business for 26 years, and I have never experienced that I can use the discretionary formula. I pay full and true value on all my lots, and a matter of fact, when I sell a lot, I have to fill out at the closing this real estate transfer thing. They will take that lot sale and use it to value the remainder of my lots. So every year, the taxes on my lots go up. And there has never been the 20, 40, 60, 80, 100. I would love that, but it is not extended to us as developers.
Senator Trevelyan.
I've got some questions about some particularities of the bill, and I don't know if that's best for Representative Kirkaby or who wants to address them, but either Senator Gant or Representative Kirkaby. I understand what a townhome is, a townhouse, a condominium apartment, and a house. I notice that the bill also says that a single-family dwelling may be, quote, residential housing consisting of four or less family units. So does that mean that a fourplex counts as a single family dwelling? And if so, then it appears on the next page of the bill that a contractor can have four single family dwellings. So are we now talking about 16 residences? Whoever knows how this is, what the intent is here, fill me in, please.
Senator, I was hoping it would be an easy question I could have referred to Senator Gant. No.
Welcome to State Affairs.
Specifically in the legislation to try to separate those two. We had this drafted specifically that a home builder could in fact only have four such of those inventories available for that tax break, that owner-occupied status. If he had six or eight or whatever it is, just those four would be available for that owner-occupied status if, in fact, they're completed and on the market for resale. There are specific townhome-type units, whether you want to call them a fourplex or whatever, that percentage of that building that it, in fact, was owner-occupied or designed for that, in fact, would receive that break, because if it was a townhome, or if you want to call it a condominium unit that had four units in it, and one of them I purchased, I would still receive that owner-occupied status if, in fact, I lived in it and occupied it. But the other three would be income or rental properties, and they, in fact, would be classified as commercial.
You realize that, and we maybe this doesn't have to be a stickling point, I suppose, perhaps if it ends up on the floor, but you realize that the way it's drafted, that because you've defined a single-family dwelling to include four unit structures, I think quite literally, if you can then have four of those, which would allow 16 units. I guess you're confirming to me, though, that's not the intent. The intent is a total of four residences that are unoccupied, but get the owner-occupied status. Am I correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman, if I could. Absolutely correct. And what I'm always comforted in is Senator Turbak Berry has a nice history on fixing my bills. And I can certainly appreciate your concern, but it was never the intent or the merits of that bill.
And then similarly, on page 2 of the bill, lines 3 and 4, as you mentioned just recently, if any portion becomes occupied, then it says only the portion of the dwelling not occupied shall be classified as owner-occupied. I suppose a beautiful irony of how how the law states the what seems to be oxymorons. But that's just meant that the occupation of part of it takes away the contractor's right to claim owner-occupied. There's no intent to deprive the purchaser of the right to claim owner-occupied, is there?
That is certainly, Mr. Chairman, if I could, that certainly is the intent of that bill, correct?
Okay, thanks.
Questions, members of the committee? Proponents, opponents? Questions? Close for committee discussion and action. Senator Bella.
Thank you, Mr. Jim. Well, I think Senator Peterson had a good point about the lumber guy building houses on blocks and totally untaxable, and then moving to lots in a smaller town, which probably encourages industrial development in the lifeline of a small town. And the reduction that was given at $468 seems to me would encourage, would make the residents less money and encourage a quicker sale, which means it goes on the tax rolls and the houses would sell faster and the developers could build more. The sooner we get it on the tax rolls, the better. And part of that question was, is there any expense on unoccupied? Well, there's still police and fire protection and others, probably more so than if they're occupied. And I got some other reasons written down here, but for those reasons and others I won't mention, I move to pass.
Do we have a do pass motion? Do we have a second? Motion is do pass from Senator Abdallah, second Senator Heideprim. Is there discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Gray.
Well, I think the effort is noble, but I'm not sure this is the place that we need to solve this problem. I think economic stimulus is a convenient argument considering our economy right now, but I'm not sure this is the decision that will cause a home builder to build a home or not. I think ultimately, and I thought about this throughout the testimony, is the discretionary formula is is where the tax breaks need to be. Now, I recognize that each county has discretion over who gets it and who does not. Some counties obviously do not allow for commercial residential in their discretionary formula. I'm very familiar with this. My partners and I just built a building last year, and it was a commercial building, so we did get it. Had we not been eligible for it, I would have been knocking at the door of my county officials, not my state government. I think the fight is with their counties. If I was with the Minnehaha County Home Builders or the Black Hills Home Builders, I would probably be at my counties asking, at least for a short time, possibly with a sunset, to be part of the discretionary formula. So I won't support the due pass motion.
Motion is due pass. We have a motion, second. Additional discussion, Senator Knutson.
I'm sort of, following Senator Gray's comments and also Mel Zellmer's comments. As somebody that's practiced in sort of the commercial area for 34 years, it never occurred to me that a house qualified as a commercial structure. I don't know for certain the chronology here, but I'm guessing 10.635.24, which is the commercial one, which the language of that section just says that commercial residential housing does not qualify for this discretionary formula. I'm guessing that was adopted first, and then sometime later we came by with the 10.635.25, which then all of a sudden defined commercial residential as more than four units. So I suspect maybe one of the things we should be doing when this comes on the floor is just clean up the definition of 35.24, because I don't think anybody's ever considered housing to be part of that discretionary formula, except for those very few places that allow the commercial residential, which is essentially large apartment houses, and again, that's a pretty small number of counties or cities that have done anything there. So I think that it's really not fair to think that the discretionary formula is a potential source of help for this situation.
Motion is due pass. We have a motion, second. Additional discussion. Additional discussion. Motion is due pass.
I'm going to support the getting this to the floor, but I have, besides the couple of drafting concerns, I do have a real concern about sorting out this discretionary matter, and if indeed that is available, I guess I'll caution the proponents that my support for this is going to be short-lived, because it does look to me like if they can access that kind of relief, we really don't need to be talking about additional relief of this nature. But I obviously want to help out the building.
Well, one other point, I didn't want to drag this on, but it makes no sense to charge a commercial rate on a piece of property that everyone knows is going to end up as a single-family dwelling, and the tax base is going to be set in we know what the taxes are. It looks to me like it's just a way of getting a few more bucks out of whether it's the developer or the contractor or both or whatever to list it as commercial and then turn around and change it to a single family dwelling when, in my opinion, it should be a single family dwelling to start with. And I still urge you to vote in favor of the bill.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Gray,
quickly in response to that, if that's the case, and maybe it should be, then I want to be next in line with the couple rental homes that I have that have single families in them that should also be classified as single family.
Mr. Chairman. Senator Roden.
Mr. Chairman, also, it's not a foregone conclusion that they will be taxed as commercial, as owner-occupied, depending on if that's a second home, and that happens more often than you might think. Also, this discretionary formula, I think, has raised a lot of issues and questions. I believe that, obviously, if we are looking at the local control aspect, the discretionary formula would be the very much leave it in the hands of the locals. I would encourage the proponents that I think that's a much more appropriate avenue to take is to address that specifically. If it's not allowed to be used, that we clarify that somehow or pursue a remedy in that direction rather than a bill that's going to create a shift of unknown proportions in the state. For those reasons, I'm going to oppose the Duke Pass motion.
We have a motion. We have a second. Is there additional discussion? Seeing none, ask the secretary to call the roll. The motion is do pass.
Senator Abdullah?
Aye.
Heideprim?
Aye.
Knudsen?
Aye.
Olson?
No.
Roden?
No.
Kerbach Berry?
Aye.
Gray?
No.
Dempster?
Aye. Motion passes with a due pass to the floor. Ask for a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Motion, second, discussion. All those in favor or opposed? Motion carries. We stand adjourned.